Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Today we're reading from, here we are, Canto 10, Chapter 5, the meeting of Nanda Maharaj and Vasudev. Today we'll be doing text 1 and 2, and they printed text 2 on the board, so I'll just read through text 1. Sri Suka Uvacha Nandastvat. Can repeat, okay? Nandastvat Maja Utpane. Jatalado Mahamanaha. Ahuya Vipran Veda Gyan. Snata Suchir Alankritaha. I forgot, everyone has the verse in front of them nowadays. Everything is there. So we'll repeat on text 2. Vachayitva Svatyayanam. Jata Karmatma Jasyabai. Karayam Ashavidhivat. Pitri Devarchanam Tata Taha Tata. Sri Suka Uvacha. Sri Sukadev Goswami said, Nandaha Maharaj Nanda, two indeed, Atmaje, his son, Utpane, having been born, Jata, overwhelmed, Alada, in great jubilation, Mahamanaha, who was great-minded, Ahuya, invited, Vipran, the Brahmanas, Vedagyan, who were fully conversant in Vedic knowledge, Snataha, taking a full bath, Suchihi, purifying himself, Alankrita, being dressed very nicely, with ornaments and fresh garments, Vachayatva, after causing to be recited, Svastiyayanam, Vedic mantras by the Brahmanas, Jata Karma, the festival for the birth of the child, Atmajasya, of his own son, Vai, indeed, Karayam Asha, caused to be performed, Vidhivat, according to the Vedic regulations, Pitrideva Archanam, the worship of the forefathers and the demigods, Tata, as well as. Translation. Sukadev Goswami said, Nanda Maharaj was naturally very magnanimous, and when Lord Sri Krishna appeared as his son, he was overwhelmed by jubilation. Therefore, after bathing and purifying himself and dressing himself properly, he invited brahmanas who knew how to recite Vedic mantras. After having these qualified brahmanas recite auspicious Vedic hymns, he arranged to have the Vedic birth ceremony celebrated for his newborn child, according to the rules and regulations. And he also arranged for worship of the demigods and the forefathers. Okay, we can repeat.
Sukadev Goswami said,
Nanda Maharaj was naturally very magnanimous. And when Lord Sri Krishna appeared as his son, he was overwhelmed with jubilation. Therefore, after bathing and purifying himself and dressing himself properly, he invited brahmanas who knew how to recite Vedic mantras. After having these qualified brahmanas recite auspicious Vedic hymns, he arranged to have the Vedic birth ceremony celebrated for his newborn child according to the rules and regulations. And he also arranged for worship of the demigods and forefathers. Purport by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Srila Vishvanath Chakravarti Thakur has discussed the significance of the word Nandas Tu. The word Tu, he says, is not used to fulfill the sentence because without Tu, the sentence is complete. Therefore, the word Tu is used for a different purpose. Although Krishna appeared as the son of Devaki, Devaki and Vasudev did not enjoy the Jata Karma, the festival of the birth ceremony. Instead, this ceremony was enjoyed by Nanda Maharaj, as stated here, Nandas Tu Atmaja Utpane Jatalado Mahamanaha. When Nanda Maharaj met Vasudev, Vasudev could not disclose, quote, "Your son Krishna is actually my son. You are his father in a different way, spiritually," end quote. Because of fear of Kamsa, Vasudev could not observe the festival for Krishna's birth. Nanda Maharaj, however, took full advantage of this opportunity. The Jata Karma ceremony can take place when the umbilical cord connecting the child and the placenta is cut. However, since Krishna was brought by Vasudev to the house of Nanda Maharaj, where was the chance for this to happen? In this regard, Vishvanath Chakravarti Thakur desires to prove with evidence from many shastras that Krishna actually took birth as the son of Yasoda before the birth of Yogamaya, who is therefore described as the Lord's younger sister. Even though there may be doubts about the cutting of the umbilical cord, and even though it is possible that this was not done when the Supreme Personality of Godhead appears, such events are regarded as factual. Krishna appeared as Varaha Dev from the nostril of Brahma, and therefore Brahma is described as the father of Varaha Dev. Also significant are the words Karayam Ashavidhivat. Being overwhelmed with jubilation over the birth of his son, Nanda Maharaj did not see whether the cord was cut or not. Thus he performed the ceremony very gorgeously. According to the opinion of some authorities, Krishna was actually born as the son of Yasoda. In any case, without regard for material understandings, we can accept that Nanda Maharaj's celebration for the ceremony of Krishna's birth was proper. This ceremony is therefore well known everywhere as Nandotsava. Oma ginata madandasha ginanjana salakaya chakshulan militam jena tasmai sri gurave namaha sri chaitanya manobastam stapitam jena bhutale svayarupa kadamayam dadati svapatandikam panchakopa tirubhishta kripa sindubhya evacha patitanam pavanebhyo vaishnavebhyo namo namaha jaya shri krishna chaitanya prabhu nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar, Sri Vasari Gaur Bhaktivinoda. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna. So as Dinabandhu Prabhu said yesterday, we finally had a verse of purport without Kamsa's name being mentioned. We've changed chapters today. So now we have a very nice description of Nanda Maharaj. It says his jubilation, overwhelmed by his jubilation. We know even in the material world, especially we know here in India, just a son being born, father becomes very jubilant. Sometimes not so jubilant. We've seen this in ISKCON, I know, back in the day, back in the 70s. Every Grahastha family, they wanted a son. Everyone wanted a son. And of course, they all thought their sons were going to be Prahlad Maharaj. You know, again, their sons would be like Prahlad Maharaj. So even materially, that's there. What to speak of Nanda Maharaj? And we see with Vasudev, his brother, and it's described, Prabhupada describes in the beginning of the chapter, Vasudev Nanda Maharaj, he's a brothers. He wasn't envious. This is devotee. We've been talking so much in the last chapter about suras and asuras, devotees and demons. I know myself, many of us, we find such a distinction very difficult. You're either a devotee, you're a demigod, or you're a demon. No in-betweens. We would hear these things. Prabhupada described these situations, the demons. I know raising children, our sons, they were raised in Gurukula for some years, very young age, from 5. And they heard that materialistic people, they were demons. And they said, better to be in a cage with a lion, tiger, and fire than to be materialistic people. I remember gradually as they got older, 10, 11 years old, they were mixing. And they thought, where are these teeth that these demons have? They're such horrible people. All these descriptions. But actually we can see it's a fact, huh? Again and again we hear one has to have devotee association. Devotee association with materialistic people is very bad for consciousness. It can immediately bring one down. This material world is a very scary place. Anyway, Nanda Maharaj, he was elated. And so was Vasudev. He had no envy that why is he getting to do this ceremony? He couldn't even attend the ceremony. Prabhupada says very nicely here in the purport. He quotes him. What is the quote? Your son Krishna is actually my son. You are his father in a different way spiritually. He quotes what he couldn't say. He said he couldn't say that. And of course he didn't say that. And the description is very nice of, at this time, of course, some 5,000 years ago, you can see this was just a, before the beginning of Kali Yuga. He describes everything that was done, you know, all the mantras that were said, getting the brahmanas, chanting Vedic mantras, and what's he say about dressing? Very nicely, appropriately dressed. I've told many times, Prabhupada liked to see his disciples also appropriately dressed, very nicely. Western clothes, devotional clothes, we call them devotional clothes, didn't matter, but nicely. Didn't like to see jeans, t-shirt kind of things, scruffy hair. No, he said first class men. So this is what's being described here as this festival is going on. Everything has to be done first class. Told you, I was a brahmachari, and by chance, I was given silk cloth. Silk, nice, saffron-colored silk cloth, dhoti, kurta, sash. So I finally, after being afraid to wear it for a long time, as brahmacharis, you know, we all have our duty, brahmachari duty, very austere, living in the ashram. But I was traveling with Prabhupada. So I never thought of wearing it until coming to India, and I had no choice because cleaning cloth was troublesome back then. It wasn't so easy just to clean your cloth here. So I put it on, and Prabhupada called me. It was in Juhu before the temple was there. Prabhupada was living in the flat on the second floor, and he rang the bell. And I went in, and I was a little shy, a little embarrassed even to go in wearing silk cloth, a brahmachari. You have your silk cloth today? No, not today. Sometimes Maharaj here, he wears a satin, nice, pretty saffron cloth. So I walked in with this shiny silk cloth. It wasn't the raw silk. It was polished silk. So it was very bright and shiny, like a silk sari, you know. Offered obeisances, and even as I was getting up, I could see Prabhupada's face, big smile on his face, and his eyes got very big. Acha, he said. He said, you look like you just came from Vaikuntha. He was happy. I was thinking, he might say, where did you get such cloth? What are you doing traveling with me like this? No, it was the very opposite. Just like it's described here, devotee. Prabhupada said, we're proud to be servants of Krishna. You look very nicely. Not beggars. He said, Krishna has everything. He can give us everything. So he liked that we look very nice. Of course, he liked, Lord Chaitanya says, like a Vaishnava. Huh? We have your tilak, nice hair. We have our sika. Jai, Hare Krishna. Prabhupada always said those things should be there, no matter what, no matter who you are, no matter what ashram you're in, brahmachari, grahastha, vanaprastha. He said, flag. For men, flag should be, he called this a flag. No, we wave the flag. That's how you would wave the flag. And these beads around the neck, very important. Our god brother servant before me, Nanda Kumar, he one day walked into Prabhupada's room. He didn't have neck beads on. Prabhupada always saw everything. If you didn't have your bead bag, he noticed. You didn't have your neck beads, he noticed. If your bead bag was dirty, he noticed. He wanted this like this. First class person. This is what's being described. Everything is being done properly. Everyone has their duties. So he said, if you knew what could happen, you don't have your neck beads, you would never be without them. You would never be without them, he said. You'd never take that risk. So duties. At this time, in this age, he's performing his duties, everything properly. And what is our good fortune? Prabhupada so much simplified our duties, huh? The same thing, we've heard it here in Vrindavan many times when they opened the temple. He also brought in South Indian Brahmins to chant mantras, chant slokas very, very properly, very distinctly. He said, but that's not for us. He says it's for them, everyone outside, so that they take this temple as being serious temple, as proper temple. He said, for us, we could just chant Hare Krishna. That's how fortunate we are. That's our only duty. No duty to the forefathers. Just chant Hare Krishna. And of course, in our ashrams, we all have our duties. We know Brahmachari Ashram, everything you get goes to the spiritual master. You get nothing. Nothing for yourself. That's your good fortune as a brahmachari. Grihastha also has his duties. Back in those days, one would become grihastha. They would ask Prabhupada, want to get married, want to do this. He'd say, you have to be prepared to live outside. You have to get your place. You're going to have a family. And just like we heard this morning, very interesting what he said this morning. Man and woman come together. Eventually, child will be there. It will take some time. But he used that analogy in the sense of being patient. How we have to exercise patience. And what did he say? You heard the reading, those who were Mangalarti this morning. How does one lose their patience? Their determination, he says. We have to have that determination. He says, and what takes away determination? Sex life. That's right. Sex life takes away determination. Prabhupada would say, Krishna consciousness is easy. Determination is difficult. But in there he describes, you just have to be patient. Of course, now in society, now everywhere in the world, in the West, it's always been there. No patience. He saw that with his Western disciples. We have no patience. Everything right away, want everything right away. Western medicine. We can see that now. This virus comes, there's madness to have these vaccines now. Although the whole world is puzzled, because in India, it seems like it just disappeared. It's raging in other parts of the world, in the USA, and they can't understand what happened in India. We see it here in the temple. No one even thinks about it anymore. Where's a mask? One, two, three people with the mask. Just boom, just like that. It literally just seemed to have evaporated. They say it here in India, it's just gone. A billion people, they don't know what happened to it. I think it's just remnants of Vedic culture, remnants of living proper lifestyle, eating proper food, offering food. And Prabhupada, way back in the 50s, I think 1955, 1956, he did BTG articles. He was writing Back to Godhead. And he talked about sacrifice, making sacrifice. And ghee, offering to Vishnu the ghee, how important it was. And in the article he described oil. He describes refined oil in there and says how it creates illnesses. So much illness. This is why he was very much pushing in every temple. One of the very first things, even before I moved into the temple, I was going to the Philadelphia temple, 1971, and they were making ghee in the kitchen. It's one of the first things I saw in the temple. I smelled incense. These were your senses. I walked into the temple, I smelled incense, I smelled chaunts, spices, cumin and chili, and I saw ghee. And the first deities I saw were Jagannath. Imagine walking the first deity you see. It's one thing to see the form of the deity, but then when you see that form is Jagannath, Subhadra, Balaram. And they said to me, I said, who are they? It's God. I'm like, okay. If you say so. Everything else seemed to, they had all the answers for everything else, so why not take that leap? I immediately took a leap of faith. Those deities are still in New Vrindavan. They are dressed every day. They're darshan deities, very big. They were carved by Naranarayan. Prabhupada called them Naranarayan, Vishvakarma, Naranarayan. He carved those deities. They're like 5 foot high wooden deities. So we all have these duties. Everyone in society has duty. I know growing up, I was 18 years old, 1969. At that time, the USA was in a war. For us, it was a big war. They were drafting people into the army. You had no choice. If you were 18 to 25 years old, and you were capable, if they called you, you had to go. That was all. You couldn't say, well, I'm doing so, I'm going to college, I'm doing this. No, you just had to go. But the one factor, I didn't have to go because my father had died. So, like here we talk about the forefathers. Because I carried that name. I was the son. They call soul surviving son. So Krishna saved me from going to a war. Otherwise, whole life would have been very different. You know, so many people that aren't natural Kshatriyas, they come back from these wars. So many suicides, shooting people, shooting their own family members, boom, 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 and then they kill themselves. It's very horrible. But people are forced to do it. It's your duty, just being raised in a certain land. I lived in Rishikesh for some time, some years ago. Israelis, every Israeli had to go in the service for 3 years, man or woman, child, 18 years old, your child, but man or woman, didn't matter. You went into the military and you were trained. And then after 3 years, you were released. And many of them, they would go to Rishikesh, not because it was some holy place, but it was with their Israeli dollars. It was a very inexpensive, nice place to live, right at the foothills of the Himalayas. But still, that duty was there. As disciples, Prabhupada gave us all duties, but very simple. Not so many complicated things as being described here. Nanda Maharaj, he gave hundreds of thousands of cows away. It's described he gave mounds of grain. What was on top of the grain? It wasn't just mounds of grain. It's described he gives mounds of grain covered with jewels. He wasn't a poor person. He was Maharaj, Nanda Maharaj. He was king. He had wealth. This was his wealth. So he was giving that in charity to the brahmanas. We have very simple formula Prabhupada gave us. He condensed everything so down to spread this movement of Lord Chaitanya. He made it so simple for his disciples. And as spiritual master, he also had his duty. He said, it's my duty to take you back home, back to Godhead. I still can never understand one that walks away from accepting that position from your spiritual master. Just to follow them, to do your service for your spiritual master, to do your service to Srila Prabhupada, and just somehow or other not have that determination, as it said, to stick it out. Eventually everything will come. That's what Prabhupada says, and just in those brief 3-4 sentences. You just have to remain patient and determined. The result is there. Why is it there? Because he's accepted that responsibility. He's taken that duty. You've become my disciple. Eternal relationship. Our great fortune. He says, so you just stay there. You remain determined, patient. Simple formula. He said, chant your rounds. follow the principles. This word too, I was just hearing in a lecture yesterday. We were very fortunate. We got that little thing, all the Prabhupada's lectures on it. You just turn it on, you can hear all day, just hear Prabhupada speaking. It's very comforting to hear Prabhupada's voice. But he was saying, even to make a Sanskrit dictionary, he said, it's very difficult. There's so many different meanings to these different words. Even here we see in this word too. He says, indeed. And in another spot, he translates the word. He gives it a... I can't find it right now. Someone can find it. But two different meanings. Even my name, Kirti. When I raced down the stairs, when Tamal Krishna Maharaj and Prabhupada were in the elevator on the second floor, and Tamal pushed me out, because it was just a two-man elevator. And I was told my service was always to be right next to Prabhupada. But Tamal Krishna Maharaj, he had other ideas. He was Tamal Krishna Maharaj. I was just Srutta Kirti, some unknown boy from New Vrindavan. So when I tried to walk in the elevator, he just looked at me. Just, oh, is that too much? No, it's not too much, nah. We have these relationships. He was Maharaj, but I didn't understand. I was just following blindly, doing my service. He pushed me out. So the elevator, Indian elevator back in 1972, it didn't travel very fast. So I just ran down the stairs, and the elevator door opened up. And Tamal Krishna sees me standing there, helping Prabhupada out, offering my hand. He looks. He was sweet, Tamal Krishna Maharaj. Is that okay? He looked. He said, Prabhupada, the Srutta Kirti is already here. Prabhupada said, yes, Kirti means expert. You'll find so many different meanings for the word Kirti, but Prabhupada said, Kirti means expert. Huh? This is why Prabhupada's books are so special. It requires one who's actually in touch with Krishna to give us proper understanding from Srimad Bhagavatam, from Bhagavad Gita, from Chaitanya Charitamrita. Otherwise, you read some other book, you don't know where you're going to wind up. You won't even know what your duty is. We understand what our duty is, huh? By Prabhupada's mercy. I'll tell one pastime. I have to tell a pastime. And it has to do, of course, this is Brahman. So anyway, Prabhupada gave us our duties to perform. He made it very simple. He encourages all, whoever you see, you tell them about Krishna. I love that little, what was said about Vishal Prabhu the other day. He said, I'm not very philosophical, but Prabhupada said three things. You give a class, you mention those three things, right? Krishna's Supreme Personality of Godhead. What was the next one? Servants. Yes, we're all servants. We're all servants of Krishna. And Lord Chaitanya came to deliver everyone. That's it. Anyone can give a class, huh? Knowing those three things. So Prabhupada also was going to tell when we were traveling. Maharaj mentioned it to me yesterday. We were at a program. He said, that was my favorite story. So when we were traveling, 22 hours, Prabhupada traveling around the world. When he arrived in Caracas, we all heard the story about Atlanta, when Prabhupada came to Atlanta, how he spoke for 2 minutes and just started crying. He asked everyone to chant Parama Karuna, if everyone could follow. A week before that, he arrived in Caracas. The same thing happened. Prabhupada was on this around the world tour in 2 months. He stopped in a dozen different centers around the world. But he went to places where he had never been. And he was seeing the chanting of Hare Krishna going on. Prabhupada was very overwhelmed. He said, Nanda Maharaj, overwhelmed, huh? He was, his happiness, jubilant. Prabhupada was in jubilant ecstasy as he traveled to Mexico City, Central America. Then he went to South America. He had never been before. None of us. Who has been to South America? Who has been to Caracas, Venezuela? Punch a goat. And I was there. So when he arrived there and he sees all these people chanting Hare Krishna, he was overwhelmed. He was in ecstasy. And he sees Gaur Nitai. They had gotten there like a week before Prabhupada. He may have known or may not have known. They could have talked to him. I don't know. They talked to Prabhupada. The deities would talk to Prabhupada in different places. So he's looking at them. And he asked, he said, the two Prabhus. Called them Prabhus. Two Prabhus. He said they've traveled very far. He didn't say, I've traveled very far. See, this is devotee. This is actual devotee. Not I came here. I sent my representative. No, he said, they've traveled very far. And he already had tears in his eyes. And he asked them, can you chant Parama Karuna? And they could. They had been chanting it every day. Karta was telling me, she was filling me in on some details I didn't know. But they had already been chanting. So then Prabhupada chanted and he stopped. He couldn't continue. His ecstasy was overwhelming. He was overwhelmed. Seeing Krishna consciousness had traveled all the way, as far away from Vrindavan as you could get. You can't get much further away than in South America. So that's what he saw. And he was happy. He was in ecstasy. But he just got quiet. And he would do that every now and then. Especially 1975. It was a very special year. That tour. Prabhupada broke down in four different temples. He stopped speaking. He just couldn't speak anymore. And of course we would all just sit quietly, hardly moving a muscle. You didn't want to make a noise, a sound, because you'd just wait for him to open his eyes. And he would always open his eyes. What would he say? Chant Hare Krishna. That's all he's asked us to do. That's our primary duty. Just chant Hare Krishna. Everything else will come. Everything will come. And follow these principles, he said. He said, you live outside, we would have these battles. Our God brothers, managers, they would have these battles. You have to live in the temple. You know, people started leaving the temple back in the 70s. That was unheard of. You had two choices. You were Krishna conscious in the temple, or you were in Maya, outside of the temple. If you were outside of the temple, you were in Maya, no question. And Prabhupada said, inside, outside. He said, doesn't matter. He said, just chant Hare Krishna. But he did say it was more difficult outside because of association. Now, of course, we can all have 24-hour association. Huh? By one of the nice things that's happened here in Kali Yuga with the internet, until they take that away from us. You know, what will happen when that day comes, if the internet crashes? Huh? We'll chant Hare Krishna. But we need that good association so we get to understand how to keep that enthusiasm, that patience, and that determination. So Prabhupada, whatever he needed to do his service, that's what he would do. See, that's our business, to know what I need to do. So the story I was going to tell was, after traveling for 10 hours, we arrived in, was it Bangkok? Where was it? And we're sitting in the airport in a transit lounge for 4 hours for another 10, 12-hour flight. 1973. So Prabhupada was 75. Traveling. Already been around the world 7, 8 times. And we're sitting down and he said, "I need to bathe." That was it. He just looked at me. And the suitcases were all in a pile because we changed airplanes as well. So there are like a few hundred suitcases all boom, 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 waiting to go back on the plane. He said, "I need to bathe. Get my things." So getting his things meant I got a towel, saffron towel. Of course, everywhere Prabhupada had saffron towels, saffron socks, saffron sweaters. So I got a towel, I got his lota, and I got a change of clothes. And we walked into a bathroom. It was almost as big as this area here. You know, just a men's bathroom. It wasn't modern style. This was 1973. So it was funky, and it was in Bangkok. It wasn't very beautiful. It was not nice at all. You know, maybe 20 sinks along one wall, little closets on the other wall to pass, and you know, a row of urinals over there. It's a horrible place. Prabhupada said, "I need to bathe." So I got everything and we went in, and a gumcha. Always, the gumcha was always there. We traveled two gumshas. Prabhupada had two gumshas. So he, you know, artfully put his hands around there with the gumsha. Everything dropped. And I have the lota, and we're standing just by the sink. So he had me filling up the lota and just doing abhishek of a living deity. These pujaris were so forward. We run onto the altar, stand in line to do abhishek. Imagine you're in an airport, and there's Prabhupada sitting just like that, squatting down, pouring water over him. I had no idea, my good fortune, what was going on. And here, bathing Prabhupada. Never, Prabhupada always, there were things he always did on his own. He shaved his face on his own. Clipped his nails on his own and bathed on his own, of course. But here I'm helping him bathe. And we're right on the middle of the floor. So water's just splashing all over the floor. And people, men, boys, walking in and out of the bathroom, you know. And of course, there's always an attendant. He's one man by the door and he's like watching this insanity going on. But no one will say anything. Who would ever say anything to Prabhupada? You just, you know. So then helped him put his cloth on, everything. Of course, he put fresh tilak on. You have to put that fresh tilak on. And then as we're walking out, and the man's babbling to me in Thai language or something. You know. And Prabhupada just walking, doesn't see anyone, just walking straight at, head held high, Prabhupada, walking out the door, nice fresh cloth, all refreshed. And me and my silly wet Prabhupada, I said, "I think he's complaining." He said, "I needed to bathe." He said, "I was feeling tired. I had to refresh." So always, whatever we need to do, that's what you do. It's very simple. So Prabhupada said, Krishna consciousness is a very simple process and not something difficult. I don't know, I wouldn't try that though, if I were you bathing in the middle of the bathroom floor in an airport. I don't think you could do that today. Of course, now they have shower stalls and things, it's a lot easier. But traveling was difficult. But when he said that, "They've traveled very far to be with you," it was him. Traveled very far to spread Krishna consciousness. So we could come and live here in Vrindavan very nicely. There's a very wonderful temple, nice guest facilities, everything. He saw everything. I'm convinced, Prabhupada, literally we say, see past, present, and future. I know in Mayapur, in his rooms in Mayapur, he would stand on the veranda and chant and just look out. And there was nothing out there. It was just rice paddies everywhere, wherever you look. But he would just look out there. I didn't know what he was looking at. But now I think he was looking. He was seeing. He was seeing the future. What he had created. What he created here in Vrindavan on a piece of land in the middle of nowhere. We were all wondering, you know, in Juhu, land in the middle of nowhere. Everybody's thinking, why are you building these places in nowhere land? All these places now are centers, the center where everyone comes. So that was Prabhupada. It's what he's given us. Is all we have to do is to do our duty. That's all we have to do. The guarantee is there. Prabhupada gives us his guarantee from a pure devotee who spread Krishna consciousness all around the world. So, Hare Krishna. Any questions, comments, corrections, observations? Oh. No, I said, no, very nice, very good.
So someone may feel that, being with Prabhupada, serving Prabhupada directly, this is something obviously very exhilarating and very wonderful. So how do you feel that I'm just too far separated, I don't have that personal association, I am reading Prabhupada's books or chanting Hare Krishna, that my following is ordered, but what kind of mentality should we have that we don't have Prabhupada directly? Sometimes it's necessary. People, they want to see the guru and talk to the guru and give them, and personal guidance and feel lost without that.
Yeah. Prabhupada never considered that to be very important. He would always say, and there's that case with Hari Kesh, when he got very upset, because the way it, after being with Prabhupada as doing secretarial and serving, cooking for him, and Prabhupada kept saying, leave, go to Germany, go here, go there. And he felt like Prabhupada was kicking him out. And then after he had gone and he had books translated, he was distributing so many books. And then Prabhupada said, I wasn't chastising you. He said, I knew what you could do instead of just being with me. Prabhupada always downplayed being with him doing personal service. It was one thing to be with him for a period of time to see how the pure devotee does things, to hear from him. And that also so he can give you guidance, so he can chastise. I had a whole other plan for today's class, but I didn't. I was going to talk a bit about criticism and the first offense and chanting of the holy name, but we didn't get into that today. So, but our business is service. So whatever we're best at, that's what Prabhupada would see, what you're good at, and then he would have you do it. See, me, he understood. I wasn't good at anything else. The only thing I was good at was giving him massage, cooking in his cooker, and being observant, hopefully, to take care of him. And that's what he said, my preaching not... When I asked to preach, that's what he said. My preaching's not good enough. So Prabhupada knew us all very, very well. And engage us. So just to be a guru, a guru groupie and travel around with the guru is not at all advised. He wants to put you into your service, and that's how you become Krishna conscious, by having that determination and that patience. And separation is also very, very healthy. We know it's the highest level of Krishna consciousness is service and separation. Prabhupada said he saw his guru how many times? 5 times or something, he said. He said, but I'm always with him. Say, he pounded. masters. He said, not a moment I'm not with my spiritual master. Because following his instructions is much more important than just sitting goo-goo eyes at your spiritual master. Of course, it's also something wonderful, and we all long for the day when we can have that association with Prabhupada again. But what we long for is that service to him, being able to serve him so closely. So that's all that's important is the instructions, because he, you know, that's what he always said. He lives in his instructions. He lives within his books. And it's up to us to realize that by following the instructions, by making the endeavor, by doing our duty. That's how you realize that personal aspect. It's transcendental, it's not material. It's not that he's not with us. People ask me that question, I'll say I feel closer to Prabhupada now sometimes than when I was sitting with him, even touching his body. If your consciousness is somewhere else, what are you doing? There's no value in it. So the real value is doing something that pleases him. That's always the point. It's just to know what it is that pleases your spiritual master. Just like you. We do something to help Prabhupada in his mission. That's our duty. And that's how we feel jubilant. That's how we become happy. That's our source of happiness. Otherwise, we're just morose and lost here in this material world. But when we engage in our service, we can feel happy knowing we're doing something for our spiritual master. Anything else? Okay. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Hare Krishna. Okay. Hare Krishna.
Thank you for the last. So since you spoke about the devotees in the early days, either you live outside, means you're in mind, or you're inside. And Prabhupada mentioned that, wherever you are, you chant Hare Krishna. But in this regard, I just wanted your little understanding, because in the early days of the movement, because I was very influenced by reading the Prabhupada's biography to join this movement. And when you read the Lilamrita, you feel that we are meant to win the world, Raina. When you read the Lilamrita. But eventually, as you mentioned, after Prabhupada left and how the movement went through, so those days there were devotees inside the temple, 99% and 1% at the outside. And now you see that opposite. And then those days, Sankirtan was the only main activity. But then we have 99% of the devotees outside whom we have to preach, cultivate, and engage. So I'm okay, I just, because of this, I tried almost 19 years. In the last 4 years, I tried to have Sankirtan person just go out and do that.
Tried to have some what?
Just to get an experience, what was the early days, last 4 years ago, we started with Sankirtan bus. We started with 9 devotees, we have 40 devotees now. So I see that there is some kind of a difference between the early days and now. And how do you look at it? I wanted your realizations on that.
Yes, a lot of differences from the early days and now. And again, we were Westerners. Early days means all Westerners who knew nothing about Krishna consciousness. And Prabhupada just gave us Krishna. So that's what I find myself, and I say, I think that's one of the most wonderful things that can happen is to be born a devotee is wonderful. And to grow up in devotional service, all these things are very nice. But imagine being suffering in the material world. You have no idea what you're doing, why you're doing it. You don't know the purpose of life. And all of a sudden, it's just handed to you. Just given. Some people spend, I know there's a Chicago devotee, he spent searching, he said, 30 years reading so many different books and scriptures and philosophical, you know, books on this and that, until he found Krishna consciousness. He said for 30 years he was searching, and then he found it. And then he realized that he was so much attached to just the searching process. You know, he found it a little difficult to have that enthusiasm and determination year after year after year. You know, he was caught up in the search. There was a little bit of excitement looking for something. But I never felt that way. I was searching for literally, you know, I hit a wall where I realized I was suffering. When I realized this material world is not a fun place, there's no love in this place. When I heard people say to me they love me, I think you're out. How do you don't even know me? You know, what's the question of love, you know? And I would immediately push that person away because I didn't know what it was. And all to have that given to you by Prabhupada, just like that, by Krishna and by Prabhupada, those years, you know, for years and years, we worked off of that enthusiasm, you know. So we have to find that enthusiasm somehow or other, that excitement in Krishna consciousness. You know, it's something that everyone had it then. A person in the temple for 1 week would preach to you and could make you a devotee just like that. He's been around for 1 week, but he's in such ecstasy. You know, in the newspapers and in the televisions, they would call us bright-faced. They would say these Hare Krishnas, and it's always the term they use. They said bright-faced, because we were bright-faced. We were happy out there on Harinam, chanting 8-10 hours a day. You know, I had a... And some people could take it, and others can't. You know, after I was in the temple, under temple protection from 71 to 83... When now I had a wife and three children and I had to go out on my own. I got a job, turned into my own business with the help of my uncle. And it was a small business. And he was so unfortunate. He couldn't even call me a Hare Krishna. He would call me a Harvey Kishner, which if anyone Jewish, you would understand. Harvey Kishner is kind of a very Jewish, Harvey and Kishner. But he couldn't even say those words, Hare Krishna, you know. But our situation is find those people that can hear that sound vibration, Hare Krishna. And the more you give it to others, the more you'll be bright-faced. It doesn't matter inside, outside, you know, temples, big place like this, where it's a little home, you have your deities in your home now, you're doing in the middle of nowhere, you know, Boise, Idaho or something where there's no temple. And Prabhupada trained us how to make our home a temple, how to live our lives 24 hours a day for Krishna. You can preach just sitting in front of your laptop. Someone today, they said they're tired of Zoom. They want to go to the temple. They're locked up in many countries around the world. They can't go to a temple, you know. So a temple definitely gives us something that you don't get outside of a temple. For me, it is. I'm very happy to be here in Vrindavan, Prabhupada's home, Prabhupada's temple, everything all rolled into one, you know. Prabhupada's samadhi. The best place in the world. And you sit right there. These boys, they sit there. Men, young men, sit there 24 hours a day doing Harinam. It's not just chanting in the temple. You have thousands of people. It's Harinam going on. And they sing and dance. Many of them are on a much higher level than those in the West. But those in the West are also doing it. You know, you see it all over the world. So the point is, you have to find out what gives you enthusiasm in Krishna consciousness. Otherwise, it's dangerous. The material world is the most dangerous place. All right. Hare Krishna. Jai. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.